Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, and as a guest this week, it's a welcome return to the pod for Sean Carroll. Sean, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm doing very good, John. How are you?
Yes, very well, thanks. Good to talk to you again, Sean. Last time we recorded for a long time, didn't we, and ended up going to bed very late, so we're going to try and buck that trend this week.
We did, yeah. I think I've just about recovered. I'm not, at my age, I'm not up for those late nights anymore, sadly, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly the same here, Sean. No arguments for me. With that said, we should probably get straight into talking about some J2 action, Sean, from last weekend. Let's talk about the games from Saturday first, which is when round six got underway. There was a really important win for Nagasaki, 2-1 at home against Kofu, a first win in five matches for Nagasaki since they won on the opening day. Nagasaki went in front thanks to a low shot from their Brazilian defender Freire on the half hour. Jin Izumisawa missed a great chance to equalise for Kofu before the break when he somehow headed wide from close range. Izumisawa made amends for that miss though in the 58th minute with a perfect cross for Kazushi Mitsuhira to head Kofu back onto level terms. And based on the highlights, it seemed like Kofu were on top after that. And Nagasaki had to rely on their goalkeeper, Kenta Tokushige. He made a big save from Motoki Hasegawa. And then a superb stop when Sho Araki's shot came back off the bar to Masahiro Sekiguchi. Tokushige did brilliantly palm the ball onto the crossbar again and keep the ball out. Nagasaki's winner came 6 minutes from full-time, Ryo Shinzato rising highest to head in a corner from Hiroki Akino. Finished 2-1 to Nagasaki. Kofu hold on to fifth place in the very early league table, but it's a second straight defeat for them. And as mentioned, yeah, very important for Nagasaki to get 3 points. The other two Saturday games both finished goalless, Sean, including second place Ryukyu. Their game at home to Omiya finished 0-0. Ryukyu's pretty incredible winning streak stops at 5 games, still pretty amazing. And they already have 3 clean sheets in 2021. I just checked back. I know they didn't have too many last season. They didn't manage to keep a clean sheet at all until round 10 in 2020. So to have 3 clean sheets from the first 6 matches this time around, is we can clearly see where they've improved. And I suppose Omiya will be happy enough going 2 games unbeaten as well. The other Saturday game saw Kitakyushu and Yamagata cancelling each other out at the Mikuni World Stadium. Very windy afternoon, wasn't it, for this game. Kitakyushu's goalkeeper Kenshin Yoshimaru made some fine saves to keep the scores level. Kitakyushu 4 games unbeaten now, although 3 of those have been draws. And we should mention a Yamagata defender, I didn't quite see who, needed to make a perfectly timed block to stop Kitakyushu from grabbing a winner right at the end of this game. So Yamagata's disappointing start continues. Only 1 win from the first 6 matches and just the 5 goals scored. They might be boosted though with some transfer news this week, Sean. The Brazilian attacker Luan, who was most recently on the books at Iwata, although I think he's technically a free agent at this point, he's joined Yamagata on a full transfer. So I expect to see him in the squad soon, hopefully boosting their attacking options. So 3 games on Saturday, Sean, not too many goals, but what did you make of the action?
Well, yeah, first of all, I guess I should admit that you got in touch ahead of the weekend's games and asked me which ones I thought I'd be watching, and you did tip Nagasaki Kofu was probably one to watch, and I said, no, that's got 0-0 all over it. So I decided instead to watch high-flying Ryukyu against Omiya, which then did become a fairly... It wasn't especially dull, I guess, as 0-0s go. Ryukyu played some quite nice stuff, but yeah, it wasn't high on the excitement stakes. So yeah, as always, I messed up there. But yeah, there wasn't really a great amount to talk to. I think Nagasaki, as you said, they got the first win for a while, which will definitely calm the tensions there, I guess. They only just missed out on promotion last year, and they've had a pretty tepid start. I don't think they've been particularly bad, but they've not looked particularly good either. The squad is not massively different to last year. And you just wonder a little bit if they're still feeling the effects of not quite going up last year, and just, you know, looking at the schedule and going, well, there you go, there's another 42 games we need to get through to try and get up again. Maybe there's just a little bit of a hangover from that. I'm not sure. But yeah, I think you've got it right. They were a little bit lucky, I think, probably to take the win. I think a draw probably would have been fair enough. Maybe of the two, Kofu did slightly more to deserve the win, but... Probably, yeah, over the course of their first few games, Nagasaki have probably been on the wrong side of the result once or twice too, so these things kind of balance out. And yeah, Ryukyu, they, as you said, this is kind of maybe a bit unusual for a Higuchi team to be so steady at the back. I think that's probably been helped a bit by having Okazaki fit again to come in at centre back. I think he missed quite a bit of last season, and I think he's really key at the back. And young Chinen looks to be settling in quite well next to him. I think Lee Yong-jik was injured at the start of the season, and he's back in and around the squad now, but he can't get in the team at the moment, which I think is fair enough. I think that's how it should be. If someone's playing well and the team are doing well, then you don't want to change it. And yeah, they're playing some nice stuff going forward. Obviously, Nakagawa has come back after things didn't quite work out for him elsewhere. He's not playing yet. I assume he must be injured, but Ikeda is doing well in the kind of the attacking midfield role. Kiyotake has come in and is doing well, and I really like Abe up front. I think in J2 he's a really steady guy to lead the line, not just because he's finishing, but I think his all-round work rate. He seems like the kind of player you'd want to have in your team. He seems to be quite a nice guy. He seems quite popular, and you know, really puts in a shift from the front. So yeah, I like watching UQ. I like their coach as well. So good to see them still doing well. Montedio Giravans, that didn't look like on paper ahead of the game either. It didn't really jump out at you. Montedio have had a bit of a slow start. I think they're probably missing Shun Nakamura, who left obviously ahead of the new season. I think both central midfielders are different. I think Okazaki came in and started at the weekend, but that was the first game he's played this season. So I think they're probably still trying to sort of get the middle of the park settled again. Yeah, I'm not sure about the Brazilian. Is it, what's his name? Is it
I think I said Luan, but he's the Nagasaki player, isn't he? It's Lulinha, yes, who's joined.
Yeah, Luan is at Nagasaki, because sometimes they have different names. Sometimes it kind of changes the way they register them, because these Brazilian players sometimes have like six names and then they have a nickname. So
Yeah, I think I had a brain fart. It's Luan at Nagasaki and Lulinha, who's joining Yamagata.
Lulin, yeah, he was at Iwate. Yeah, I'm not sure. I was never really impressed by him. He never looked like a bad player, but he never looked. I always kind of think if you're bringing in a player from abroad, you need them to be better than the local players. They need to have something different. They need to be bringing something that you're not going to get from a local player. And I never really felt that he added anything. It always seemed like he was trying his best. It never looked like he was just sort of coasting and not interested. He looked like he really wanted to be making a difference, but he just never really clicked. It could just be it was the wrong team for him. It could be they were playing him in the wrong position. I don't know. So yeah, obviously don't want to write him off yet. But Montedio play a fairly set style of football. They pretty much stick to 4-4-2. Vinicius Araujo is set as the main striker. And I think Atsutaka Nakamura is still injured. If he can get fit, you'd think he'll be a decent option in J2 to play kind of in behind. Minami obviously is a decent player too. So where Lalinha is going to fit in, I'm not entirely sure. Whether it's just because he already had a visa to be here and it was, you know, he was available and they thought we need something, why not give it a shot? I don't know. But yeah, Montedio are they're a steady enough team, but I think they'd need more than him to kick on and make any real impact on the season, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. I think the point was made by Mike Innes recently that Yamagata don't have a lot of width, but you know, quite a narrow game. Perhaps the idea that Lulinha will offer a bit more width, but I think I remember him playing fairly centrally for Iwata as well. So yeah, we'll wait and see, Sean. I guess they Yamagata just thinking they do need a little bit of help up front based on the first, you know, the first month or so of the season.
Yeah, it could just be a fact that because Vinicius did so well last year, maybe teams are now paying extra attention to him. And if they're shutting him down, they do need a second option, something else to threaten. I think they signed Horigome from Jeff in the off season too, but he seems to have been in and out of the squad, so I'm assuming he's not fully fit either. And yeah, as I mentioned before, I think Nakamura leaving, he was so key in the middle of the park, and when you lose a player of that quality, I think yeah, just not just on in terms of, you know, losing a very good player, but maybe for the team as a whole. I think anyone who's ever played football, I think as well, like if you had the best player in the team, if they weren't playing that weekend or they left the team, kind of psychologically, you're kind of thinking, we're not as good as we were, are we? And it takes some, you need to kind of get over that bump as well. And none of the new signings who've come in so far have really taken any games by the scruff of the neck and shown that they're capable of filling his boots. So it's still very early in the season. So, you know, someone like Yamada might do that. Or they signed, I think, Ibuki Fujita as well, came in, who's a solid J2 player. So we might find in a month or two, once they find their rhythm, that things pick up. But yeah, at the minute, it's been a bit of a slow start for them.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah, good to mention that it's still early days. Isn't it? Just the small match of 36 rounds to play. Yeah, so yeah, it's exactly. All could be different. Different in December. Okay, Sean. Thanks for the analysis on the Saturday games. We'll talk about Sunday now, where I think there were seven matches and a few more talking points. In the Sunday games, Albirex Niigata held on to top spot in the table, but just like Ryukyu, they lost their 100% record, didn't they? Drawing 2-2. Away at Sagamihara. No Michael James in central defence for Niigata for this game, but it didn't seem to be a problem early on, as Niigata took the lead in just the 12th minute. Romero Frank firing Yoshieki Takagi's low cross into the roof of the net from close range. Shortly after that, Kota Hoshi almost equalised for Sagamihara pretty much straight away, but fired wide. Hoshi was involved in Sagamihara's leveller midway through the first half, though. He was brought down by Yuzuru Shimada inside the area for a penalty, which was emphatically converted by Yuri. And yeah, just before half-time, Sagamihara's goalkeeper Motoaki Mura made a good save, a good block from a Niigata corner. So it was 1-1 at half-time. Right at the start of the second period, Sagamihara actually went in front. Ryu Kawakami's volleyed through ball sent Shu Hiramatsu clean through, and he had plenty of time and space to steady himself and easily beat the Niigata goalkeeper Koto Abe. Niigata responded well, though, and they equalised on the hour mark when Shimada's deep corner was headed in at the far post by Takehiro Ko. I'm still not sure what the goalkeeper Mura was doing for that one, but yeah, it was 2-2. And that's how it finished. So three draws so far for Sagamihara, which is okay, I think, for their first J2 campaign, but just the one win. That leaves them sitting just outside the four-team relegation zone. And at just 3 points behind Niigata and Ryukyu are Kanazawa, in third place. Their fine start to 2021 continued with a slightly fortunate 1-0 win on the road at Machida Zelvia on Sunday. The winning goal was an own goal from Machida's defender Shohei Takahashi in the 90th minute, diverting a low cross past his own goalkeeper. To be honest, Sean, I thought Machida had looked the more likely side to score, just based on watching the highlights. But yeah, it wasn't to be. They were beaten 1-0 by Kanazawa on the day. Kanazawa unbeaten now since losing away at Nagasaki back on the opening day. So a pretty impressive run of 5 games unbeaten for them. For Machida, it's a kind of perfectly mixed start, isn't it? 2 wins, 2 draws, and 2 defeats after 6 matches. Sean, what did you make of Kanazawa winning away at Machida and Sagamihara drawing 2-2 with Niigata on Sunday?
I think you got it spot on. Kanazawa were very lucky to win that. Machida had they had the better thing, certainly in the first half. They were playing some very nice football, moving it around quite quickly and making not really clear chances, but they were getting into good positions, and it looked like if either team was going to score. Kanazawa, I like watching both of these teams, and I do like watching Kanazawa. I think they play some quite nice stuff on the counter. They always try to play as proactively as they can when going forwards. But yeah, in this game they look quite content to really sit deep and wait for their chance. I would have quite liked for them to play with a little bit more urgency. But yeah, Machida, as I said, they're playing some quite nice stuff, but they just still seem to lack a little bit of something extra. We've seen, again, obviously it's very early, but Niigata so far, they've had a couple of players, obviously Shion Honma and Suzuki has slotted in quite well and started scoring straight away. Yoshieki Takagi has been doing well. Like, they've had players who are kind of a cut above and they're playing well and they're making decisive contributions in games. And I think at the minute, no one for Machida really has done. Taiki Hirato has looked decent, as he always does, but he's not really added that extra quality yet. Obviously, they've signed Chong Tese ahead of the season. I'm assuming he's not quite fully fit yet because I don't think he started yet. He wasn't even in the squad for the first few games. I think he's sort of been on the bench for the last couple and come on, but he's not really hitting his stride yet. Dudu, I think, is either not in the country yet or just arrived and in that kind of isolation camp kind of thing. So maybe once Teste and Dudu are up to speed and clicking, there'll be the difference that, you know, maybe a bit, if this game had come a bit later in the season, or if that pair had been available, Machida might have had enough to win this game by a couple of goals. But as always in football, if you don't strike when you're in the ascendancy, you always run the risk of letting it slip. And yeah, last minute own goal, like worst way to lose a game that you probably should have won. But yeah, Kanazawa, a decent enough side. Yanagishita basically seems to decide his favorite 11 players and then sticks with them until someone gets injured or falls woefully out of form. I think he's pretty much started with the same 11 for every game so far. So we've sort of touched upon it with a couple of other teams where maybe they haven't hit their rhythm yet. But if you've got that consistency, and obviously differently to last year where clubs were playing a game every 3 or 4 days for 6 months, having a week in between matches to fine tune stuff on the training pitch, to make sure that players are familiar with what they should and shouldn't be doing, it seems to be working quite well for them. And they've done well to cope. Obviously, they lost quite a few players. They lost, obviously, Mutsuki Kato was key for them last year up front. But Senema and Niwa coming in have done reasonably well. Two, I guess, in a way, sort of an old-fashioned strike partnership. Niwa is a bit more lively, like a bit more mobile, moves around, and is more about his movement and his sort of trickery in finding the space, whereas Senema is more the kind of target man holding the ball up and creating the chances. So yeah, I think they'll do reasonably well again. I don't think they've got really enough in the squad as a whole to make a surprise push for promotion or anything that far. But I think yeah, they'll do well and maybe finish in the top half or, you know, roundabout there. I don't think they'll be struggling at all. Other game, yeah, Niigata. I think yeah, you mentioned Michael James was not playing, and I think that was probably the difference. As you said, the second goal for Sagamihara was a pretty poor one to concede. It was all a bit kind of sort of Sunday league, a sort of hoofed clearance from Sagamihara. Suddenly had the centre forward pretty much running through one-on-one, which you don't really see that often at this level. And yeah, Sagamihara, you mentioned they've got three draws and a win. I still think they're looking, yeah, maybe they're still kind of finding their feet, but I still think they just look a little bit reactive. And again, maybe lacking a little bit of that quality. I think Shohei Kiyohara and Jungo Fujimoto still don't seem to be completely fit. And a couple of their Brazilian signings, I think the goalkeeper, is it Aguinor or something like that? And a Brazilian centre-back as well, Koundé. I think they still haven't been able to join up. So again, once the pieces fall into place, maybe once the players have a bit more confidence in themselves and a bit more self-belief that they can cut it at this level, or maybe they can be a little bit more adventurous in games, they could do okay. But yeah, I still think they're playing within themselves a little bit. Obviously, against Niigata, who started with a 100% record, you don't want to leave yourself open to the kind of beating that Tokyo Verdy got the previous round, but. So yeah, I think in this particular game they can be forgiven, but yeah, I'm hopeful that they'll start to play a little bit more proactively in the coming weeks if they really want to make a push to staying in the division.
Yeah, I think that's good analysis. It's interesting, isn't it? There are several teams who are going to have foreign kind of new players coming in the next couple of weeks, and we don't know, in a lot of cases, we don't know how good these players are. We don't know what kind of fitness level they're going to have or how sharp they're going to be. Yeah, let's hope that Aguinor and Koundé are really, really good and they can propel Sagamihara forward. I think for Machida, a word that's come up many times on the pod so far is X factor, and I think they have lacked it a little bit in the game so far, but I think if you just Google J2 X Factor, I'm sure that Chong Tezi and Dudu are quite near the top of the search results on this. So Machida do have that kind of reserve to call on. Yeah, there's lots to look forward to in terms of Machida. I do think there's more to come from them. At Sagamihara, I tend to agree. We mentioned that they've got new foreign imports coming in, but they're coming in at the back, aren't they? And I think it's midfield and up front where they look like they're a little bit short. So we'll wait and see. A 1-0 away win was a pretty popular scoreline over the weekend, wasn't it? There were two other games that ended in similar fashion. Iwata won 1-0 away in pouring rain at Okayama, with Lukian scoring the winner with a brilliant curling shot from just outside the box in the 49th minute. I noticed that Iwata dropped their out-of-form goalkeeper Naoki Hata for the first time this season for this game, and they replaced him with Riki Mura, and he helped them to keep their first clean sheet of the year. So I'm not sure if that was to do with coming up against a fairly poor opponent in Okayama, or whether it was a positive change, more broadly. But for Iwata, 3 wins and 3 losses so far, leaving them in 8th place. For Okayama, they have the same record as Machida, 2 wins, 2 draws, and 2 defeats. The other 1-0 away win was for Tochigi, down in Yamaguchi. 3 straight wins for Tochigi now, after starting the season off with 3 straight defeats. The vital goal in this game came on the stroke of half-time. Tochigi had a free kick right on the corner of the Yamaguchi penalty area. It was Janino who fired it straight into the wall, but when the ball came back to him, he volleyed it through a crowd of players and past Kentaro Seki, who I think was a little bit unsighted in the Yamaguchi goal, for 1-0. The pitch in this game, Sean, in my notes I've written, it was semi-waterlogged. Not exactly ideal football conditions, but something that we've seen a few times in the J-League. It wasn't easy for the teams to play football, was it? But Tochigi's goalkeeper, Shuhei Kawata, made a brilliant late save to preserve his side's lead when he tipped a close-range effort from Tsubasa Umeki onto the crossbar. For Yamaguchi, third bottom of the early league table, which sounds bad, but they do have 5 points, so they're not exactly being cut adrift. Did you have any thoughts on these games, Sean? So Okayama 0, Iwata 1, and Yamaguchi 0, Tochigi 1.
I think, to take the second one, I think Tochigi were similar to Kanazawa away at Machida. I think they were quite flattered to take the 3 points. Yeah, you mentioned the conditions weren't worse, but I only saw the highlights from this and read a report. And basically, it sounds like Yamaguchi, and from what I saw, it looked like Yamaguchi probably deserved the win. I think, Tochigi, this was almost a definition of a smash and grab. They got their goal and then decided they were gonna cling on for dear life. So I think Renova, they would have been disappointed not to take at least a point from that. This is what Tochigi can do, isn't it? I think Tasaka now has got them set up pretty well, even though they tend to lose players at the end of each season and have to rebuild sort of half the team. He's good at getting the team doing the simple things well. So after a shaky start, he seems to have steadied the ship a bit. And 1-0 to Tochigi, I think that's a score we'll see quite a few times over the rest of the season. And Okayama, I think Okayama is almost the opposite of Kanazawa, in that, there's sometimes, if you stick with the same 11 every week, sometimes it's a good thing to do, and sometimes it's not. And whereas for Kanazawa, obviously things are going well, and you get that kind of rhythm building. I think for Okayama, things aren't particularly clicking. Things don't seem to be going that well, but the coach seems to be happy just to plow on with the same 11 players in the same positions every week. And just trusting them to do something differently. And they don't really have any spark. They've got the likes of Uejo and Miyazaki. Kiwara Miyazaki, isn't it? Or Miyazaki, I think. Who are decent players and capable of making stuff happen. But I sometimes think that the way the team plays is too rigid. They're sort of being kept in a straitjacket almost. And if you gave those two players a bit of freedom just to kind of to play as they wanted in the final third, you might cause opponents a bit more trouble. Lee, I want to say Yongje, of course, injured again. He's a very good player at this level, and when he's fit, he's close to unplayable, I think. But he's had so many injuries now. You do start to wonder if maybe the club should start looking to bring somebody else in to take over, because it's every year he seems to miss more games than he plays. And that does seem to be holding them back, because they don't really seem to have a capable replacement to come in and fill in for him. And Jubilo, I've not really been that impressed with them so far. They've got enough quality in the squad to I think be there or thereabouts. I think if there were playoffs this year, you'd think they're pretty much, if not guaranteed to get in the playoffs, at least guaranteed to be making a challenge at the end of the season. I think they should be there or thereabouts. But I still don't know if they've really got got enough of that something extra, enough players with the kind of, I don't know how you put it, the drive maybe to really make something happen. A lot of the players are experienced players. They're sort of the wrong side of 30 or sort of approaching 30. They've kind of been at their peak and now they're at that level of, how would you describe it? The kind of players that Jeff United usually sign, you know, they've got a name, they've been around, they've maybe played for a reasonably big J1 team for a few years. And you just kind of sometimes wonder, have they, as a unit and as individual players, have they really got the drive still to kick on? Whereas when you look at the likes of, say, obviously they're top now. So if you take Niigata, for example, they've got some kind of younger players or players that still, they've never quite achieved what their potential suggested they could do, so they still kind of have that about them. And with Jubilo, I don't know, I sometimes feel like they're not quite pushing as much as they could be. So yeah, I think they'll still be up there, and they could if they click into their groove, and if Kouki Ogawa finds the kind of form he had a few years ago, I think he could be very good at this level. But he really seems to have dropped off. I think he had quite a bad injury, and then he dropped in and out of form. I think there was some kind of disciplinary issue last year, maybe to do with coronavirus and going somewhere he wasn't supposed to when he wasn't supposed to or something. So yeah, it seems like he's maybe taken his eye off the ball a bit. Obviously, he was tipped way back when to be the number nine for Japan at the Olympics last summer. I remember heading into the start of last season, that's what he was kind of being built up as. And then obviously with the Olympics being postponed and whatever, he seems to have just completely dropped off the radar now. So whether that has also maybe had an effect on his confidence or something, I don't know. But yeah, Jubilo are not, they're not a team that, I don't think it's not that easy to get too excited about them. But again, if you can grind out enough wins like this, I think it ensures that you'll be there or thereabouts when the important placements are made at the end of the year.
Yeah, fair enough. I think they're quite reliant on Lukian at the moment, aren't they? I think he scored three goals already. And Kouki Ogawa, you mentioned, he has got almost limitless potential, but he's just not done it for a year or two. So yeah, if I was an Iwata supporter, I'd be keeping my fingers crossed that Lukian stays fit, because he does seem to be the key to them scoring goals and making chances at the moment. Yeah, thanks, Sean. Great, great, great stuff so far. We're going to take a quick comfort break now, and when we come back after a little bit of music, let's talk about the rest of the games from round six that took place on Sunday. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Sean and I are suitably refreshed. We're going to move on, Sean, and talk about Kyoto, who are up into fourth place now after beating Jeff Chiba 2-1 at home, Kyoto's first home win of the season. Kyoto were in front in the 33rd minute in this game. Peter Utaka blocked a Jeff clearance, traded passes with Tenma Matsuda. When Utaka got the ball back and crossed low into the box, a combination of Matsuda and Jeff's Issei Takahashi bundled the ball over the line. This looked like a fairly clear own goal from Takahashi to me, but I think the J-League website says that it's Tenma Matsuda's goal. So I don't know, maybe I need my eyes tested perhaps. Jeff looked quite up for this game at the start of the second half. Tomi Omiki hit the post, and Keita Buanika, impressive as usual, forced a good save from Kyoto's goalkeeper Tomio Wakahara. Kyoto's second goal came from a long clearance that found its way to Utaka on the halfway line midway through the second half. The Jeff defender Iki Arai managed to recover the ball and then just stopped playing and allowed Utaka to pick his pocket, carry the ball into the penalty area, and then cross for Shinpei Fukuoka to tap in. Awful defending, really, from Jeff on this goal, Sean. Jeff did pull a goal back at the end. Miki's free kick was deflected into Iki Arai's path, and he partly made amends for his mistake on the second Kyoto goal by scoring from close range. So it finished Kyoto 2, Jeff 1. Kyoto not entirely convincing just at the moment, I feel, and Jeff second bottom of the table after six rounds. But on the positive side, their first choice goalkeeper Shota Arai is now back from injury. This game against Kyoto was his first appearance of the season, and their new Brazilian striker Saldana is now in Japan, albeit he's in the J-League kind of quarantine bubble at the moment. So that there might be some positivity coming Jeff's way soon.
I wouldn't build it. I wouldn't build it up too much. Don't ever say there might be some positivity coming Jeff's way soon.
Yeah. Well, we had a question on Jeff, Sean, from Gabriele Agnello on Twitter. He asks, is he the only one who is starting to think they're actually risking a drop down to J3? So Kyoto 2, Jeff Chiba 1, Sean. What do you think about the game and Gabriele's worry?
Is it a worry? Is it wishful thinking? I don't know where his allegiances lie, but no, I think similarly to what I said about Jubilo before, I think they have too many good players in the squad to be that bad. I certainly don't think they'll be doing much better than last year. They'll probably be mid-table at best. They just, again, similarly to Jubilo, I just think they have too many players that if they could have team of players like Buanica, if they could have a team, if they just went 1 year, we're not going to sign anyone that used to play for Nagoya or Gamba, and we're just going to give these young players who are coming through, who are hungry, who've got the ability, who want to work hard, and I think they could really do something. I think, you know, when you look at the teams that tend to do well in J2, they always have players who are hungry, maybe some players maybe you haven't really heard much about who've come through from the youth teams or from a university, or and Jeff just, they seem to have this reliance upon big names. When you look through the squad, you know most of the players, you've seen them. Oh yeah, I've heard of him. Oh yeah, he was here, wasn't he? He was quite good there. And so I think they're too good to get drawn that low down the table. But just, yeah, as a unit, things just don't really seem to work out for them. Doesn't matter who the players are or who the coach is. It's been a decade now, and it just seems to be the same story on a loop. And I don't know enough about what happens behind the scenes there or who's in charge at the higher levels. But there's obviously something to do with the club, the way it perceives itself, or I don't particularly like using this word because I think it's too vague, but the culture, if you want to say the culture at the club. It's just something doesn't seem right, because again, if you look through the squad list, they should be doing better than two-thirds of the division, and they never do. And yeah, I think in this game they played all right, they did okay. And yeah, as you said, Kyoto I don't think are really quite in gear yet. Obviously they've, Chokije has come in as the coach, and I think he has quite a specific way of wanting his players to play, and Kyoto have a massive squad. I was looking through their squad the other day, and they've got so many players as well, and you just kind of wonder what's the best way to get the use out of these players. You know, I think I noticed they've still got Tadanari Lee, and he wasn't on the bench at the weekend, and you think players like that could probably walk into half of these J2 teams as a regular starter up front. I think they've got a few players who are injured. They signed Taketomi, didn't they? Yeah, Taketomi's come in, and I think he's only played one or two games, so he's obviously not fully fit. I really like Soneda, kind of attacking midfielder they got from Corfu a couple of years ago. He's been in and out of the squad as well. They've just got a lot of players like that where you just kind of think they almost have too many, and maybe Chol has too many players that he has to kind of try to manage. If you think if they could do a kind of a Jose Mourinho kind of thing and go, right, I want two players for each position, that's it, and kind of stick to that. But it seems to be a bit, yeah, it still seems to be kind of early doors. Obviously, they won this game. I'm sort of talking as if they didn't do well. They won this game. It's another 3 points. And with when you've got Peter Utaka up front, it still, I'm not entirely sure how old he is now. I know I think he's definitely sort of the wrong side of 35 now, but it sometimes looks like, yeah, he's, you know, it's almost like the someone's older brother playing with the younger brother's mates. Like, he still just looks like it's all a bit too easy for him. There was one attack, I don't know if it was for one of the goals or if it was a chance that didn't end up in a goal, but he kind of just was almost ambling into the area and holding off the defender who was applying pressure without really trying. And you think, yeah, if you've got someone of that quality up front, that can be the difference in the end over the course of a season. I think he got both the assists for the two goals here. So when you've got someone like that, you can kind of build the attack around. You can't really go too far wrong. But yeah, I think Chol needs to try and settle on the sort of 15, 16 or so players that he wants to be his core players. And then you've got these other ones that can come in when there are injuries or players drop in or out of form. I don't think Shoji has been playing so far. I don't know if he's injured, but he, at this level, he's such a good player in the middle of the park, just controlling things, just doesn't really do anything flashy, but he can just do the kind of work you need in there so well. And he hasn't been playing. I think Kawasaki, who's been playing instead of him, is a decent player, but maybe just not doesn't quite have the same influence yet. So yeah, I don't know if Shoji is injured or if maybe Chol just doesn't fancy him and wants something different. But maybe that too, I kind of touched upon it with Montedio and Nakamura going, but yeah, maybe that change in the middle is just taking the team a little bit of time to adapt to. But I think of these two teams, I think, yeah, this season, I think things will be, I think Kyoto are pretty much guaranteed to go from strength to strength and do a bit better. Whereas with Jeff, I can see them again just being a sort of a win one, lose one, draw one for the rest of the season on repeat. But no, to answer the question, I don't think Jeff will get sucked into the relegation places, but I can't see them moving too far beyond it.
Fantastic stuff, Sean. Yes, I expect Tadanari Lee to turn up at Jeff United next season. In the near, or even sooner. When does the transfer window open? I'm sure phone calls are being planned as we speak. Sean, talking of massive squads, Matsumoto Yamaga finally got their first victory of the season and scored some goals at the expense of Blaublitz Akita, with their game at the SunPro Alwyn Stadium finishing 3-1 to Matsumoto. There was an exciting end to the first half in this game, with Akita going ahead in the 39th minute. Corner ran all the way through to the back post, where Akita's left back, Ryutaro Iyo, was able to fire the ball into an empty net. The lead lasted less than 2 minutes, though. Matsumoto equalised when a low cross from Shuto Kawai caused some confusion in the Akita defence. The ball eventually went in off their captain and striker, Ryota Nakamura, for an own goal, so it was 1-1 at the break. Kawai nearly put Matsumoto ahead at the start of the second half, but shot just wide. And when Matsumoto did go in front again in the 65th minute, it was thanks to a brilliant curling effort from their captain, Kazuhiro Sato. Maybe the wind helped the ball to travel a little bit, but it has to be something special to beat Yudai Tanaka, the Akita goalkeeper, from outside the penalty area, and it was a fantastic goal. Matsumoto finished off a pretty tired-looking Akita with a third goal 10 minutes later, Kunitomo Suzuki nodding home a deep cross from the right flank from Ryo Toyama. So at 3-1 it finished, Akita's first defeat since the opening day, so somewhat incredibly, they're sixth in the table at the moment. We had a question on Akita from Martin Spivey about this game. Sean, how much do we think Akita missed Kaga at centre-back in this game? And what do we think of Iyo, the left-back who scored the opening goal in this game? Martin thinks he's a classy player, good at getting ball into the box, also a good tackler. So have either of these players, Kaga or Iyo, jumped out at you this season? Sean, what did you think of the match?
Kaga... I think Kaga is playing because I don't know the guy's first name. Is it Chida? Chida was, I think, Kaita. That's it. Yeah, he was first choice with Han Hogang last year at centre back, and he hasn't been playing. So I'm guessing he's injured as well. And I think Kaga was coming in covering for him. And I think Kaga is one of those kind of the archetypal journeyman. He's been around. He can play centre back, full back, and he's exactly the kind of player I think that every J2 team wants as your third choice centre back, because he can come in. Obviously, he's been around the block, but he's still going. He's still got the drive to be playing. So he's obviously keeps himself in shape. He's not going to be intimidated by being thrown in when he's called upon. And you need that player to come in. So the fact that he wasn't playing and Tanioku came in, obviously then you're kind of looking, well, this is now the fourth choice centre back. So I think it definitely would have been a miss. Not to have anything against Kaga. I'm not saying that's because he's a particularly vital player for them, but I think it just means you're getting down the pecking order then of centre-back. So I think it definitely would have had an impact. And yeah, Iyo is a player I like too. I think he came through initially at Yamaga. I think I remember seeing him at Yamaga quite a few years ago and liking the cut of his jib, quite an attack-minded fullback, which is... I used to play fullback, and that was the kind of fullback I like to think I was in my head, but I never was quite. I was never good enough going forward. I was always kind of a reasonably attack-minded, but not very good at it, fullback, or quite a defensive-minded winger. I never really had the skills in my toolbox for the attacking side of the game, sadly. But yeah, he's always that kind of player is one I like to watch. And I think he might have been at Nagasaki, then Sendai, but I'm not sure. But yes, I do like him. I think he's a good player. And I think for a team like Akita, who are built fundamentally to not concede and to be solid, I think you need to have players in the fullback positions in particular that are able to to join the attack and make stuff happen, because they tend to try and attack from wide. If you can have players that are willing to push on, I think I saw, I'm not sure which game it was, it might have been the first or the second game of the season, so I forget now who they were playing, but Dazon do this good thing at half time where they show the players' average positions. EO's position, average position for the first half was in advance of, I want to say Shige. I think Shige plays on the left, but it might be Okino. I always confuse which one's on which wing, but whoever was the left winger, Eo's average position for the first half was in advance of him. So I remember thinking maybe the coach has swapped them round, maybe, but no, he was playing as left back, but he was really bombing on and overlapping. And I think, yeah, that kind of play, if he can stay fit, yeah, absolutely. For a team like Akita who are built on those kind of attacks, it's absolutely vital for them. But yeah, Kaga's injury, I think, as well, is a concern with Chida out as well, and Han having left, you're sort of down to the less experienced and perhaps by sort of less trusted by the coach options there. So it could be something to keep an eye on if his absence does continue for a few more games, for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, very, very good, Sean. I'm like you. I could attack and defend when I was a left back in my playing days, but I didn't have the stamina to do both at the same time, so just had to pick one. Yeah, basically, I could get over the halfway line, but then I had to stay there. Tough times. Two more games to catch up on from the weekend, Sean. We'll talk about Gunma first of all, if that's okay. They were victorious away at Ehime, winning 2-1. Plenty of chances for Gunma in the first half of this game, but it was 0-0 at the break. Gunma were almost gifted the lead early in the second period, weren't they? An underhit back pass from Ehime's captain, Takanori Maeno, put Tatsuya Uchida clean through, but he managed to miss the target, so it stayed goalless. It was just a temporary reprieve for Ehime, though, because on the hour mark, Gunma's Toshiya Tanaka crossed for Hiroto Hatao to thump in a header for the Gunma opener. Ehime were pretty unlucky just moments later. Takashi Kondo thought he'd equalised when he pounced on a rebound to score, but he was ruled offside. The replays that were in the DAZN highlights package suggested he was at least level with the last defender. I thought that was a good example of the kind of luck you don't get when you're down at the bottom of the league, Sean, because I thought he was onside. That goal should have been given. Gunma sealed the points on the counter-attack. About 3 minutes from full time, Genki Omai crossing for the substitute Kazune Kubota to head home. Ehime did manage to pull a goal back just 60 seconds after that, though. Shigeru Yokotani with a looping header over the Gunma goalkeeper Keiki Shimizu from a Rikia Motegi cross. But it ended up finishing 2-1 to Gunma. For them, that ends a run of three straight defeats, and they pick up a win for the first time since the opening day. For Ehime, it looks a bit ominous, doesn't it, Sean? They're bottom of the table on a run of three straight defeats now, and they're the only side in J2 yet to pick up a win. The last game on the round 6 slate was at Ajinomoto, where Tokyo Verdy beat Mito 2-1 thanks to a brace from their rookie forward Ryoga Sato on his very first J-League start. Sato put Verdy in front in just the second minute in this game, volleying home after Yuhei Sato, no relation of course, had headed the ball into the Mito penalty area. Mito came back very strongly though. The impressive Shunpei Fukuhori hit the post for them in the 10th minute before they equalised in the 18th. Masato Nakayama set up Koya Okuda to make it 1-1 from just inside the area. Fukuhori then managed to hit the crossbar with a volley and fire another chance wide before half time. He could have had a hat trick, but it was 1-1. At the break. In the second half, there were plenty of chances for Verdy. Ryoga Sato, having scored once, had a shot blocked at close range by the Mito goalkeeper Ayumi Niyakawa, and Verdy's top scorer this season, Junki Koike, slammed a shot against the post as well. The goal that proved to be the winner came in the 73rd minute following a Verdy corner. Masashi Wakasa, the Verdy defender, had a shot on the Mito goal but completely mistimed it. The ball dropped perfectly for Sato to fire his second goal into the roof of the net from about 6 yards. So Verdy, in a very entertaining game, beat Mito 2-1. That's Verdy's first win since beating Ehime at home back on the opening day. Mito are Mito, aren't they, Sean? 3 wins and 3 defeats from 6 games so far this season. We should mention as well that their preparation for this game is probably a little bit disrupted because they had a positive COVID-19 test in their squad ahead of the game, and there was some doubt whether the game would go ahead. Yeah, they played well, and I think they can probably consider themselves a bit unlucky to not to have got anything in the end. So what do you think, Sean? Ehime 1, Gunma 2, Tokyo Verdy 2, Mito 1.
I don't think Ehime won is something you're going to be saying that often this year, unfortunately. I think they look like they're really going to struggle, don't they? I think a lot of people at the head of the season probably thought they were in the J Parade. I think a lot of people probably put them in the bottom four, and we haven't really seen much so far to suggest much else. They just seem quite easy to play against, quite devoid of ideas or sort of spontaneity going forward. They haven't been playing Moria, who seems to be one of the few players they've got who has something about him, is able to kind of create stuff from nothing. I don't know if he's not fully fit, or if the new coach just doesn't fancy him in the way the team is set up at the moment. I know Kondo has come back and he's kind of playing as a sort of second striker, support striker, which is, I think, probably Moria's best position. So maybe the coach just doesn't want to play him in a deeper role and wants to go with Kondo for now, but I'm not sure. I think I mentioned it last time I was on the pod, but I sometimes think if teams were just to go for it a bit more. You mentioned obviously Mito just then. Mito have won three, lost three. They've got 9 points in the bag. You know, you lose as many as you win, but that's fine. At the end of the season, you'll probably be all right. And I think, you know, Ehime, they've got enough decent players in the squad to be able to make sure they don't finish in the bottom four, but it's just a case of whether the coach can get them set up in a way to do that, and whether the players can do it regularly enough. Or, you know, in the case of the older players, Yokotani, Yamase, whatever, can they stay fit to do it for the whole season? And so far, the signs don't look too good for them. And I think Gunma, yeah, they had a pretty terrible start last season, but grew into the campaign. And yeah, they've done okay this year. When you've got someone of the quality of Genki Omae up front, he's always gonna make chances or put them away when they come. So I think again, I can't see them pulling too far away from the bottom of the table. But I think they'll give themselves more of a chance, I think, than Ehime. I think Ehime will probably struggle to get away from that bottom four or five places. And yeah, the Verdi Mito game was a bit of a weird one. Verdi obviously coming in after the horrific game against Niigata the previous week. They obviously wanted to shake off that drubbing, and they did okay. Nagai seems intent every week to keep introducing youngsters. They seem to have a never ending production line of these youngsters, and yeah, Yoga Sato getting a couple of goals on his first start, the latest one. They do seem to be lacking. Obviously, he would have been, to use the English parlance, he would have been well up for it giving his first start, but whether he's able to replicate that throughout the season, I don't know. Jin Hanato is an all right player, but he's never really pushed on, never really looked like anything other than a 6-7 out of 10 player on his day, and he seems to have struggled with fitness as well. And with Leandro and Okubo having both left, he's pretty much the only recognised striker. But they have, I think they've re-signed this Jalton Paraiba, who was there a couple of years ago. And from what I could tell from a very quick Google, it doesn't seem to have played football since. I know obviously last year with the coronavirus, it was probably football all around the world was kind of a bit stop start, but it doesn't look like he's had any professional contract anywhere in the meantime. So what kind of physical condition he's in remains to be seen, but he did look like something a bit different when he was with Verdi last time. So if he can come in and get fit, then he could be the difference for them going forward. They've got obviously the likes of Junki Koike tends to pop up with goals, and as I mentioned, a lot of decent young players coming through. But at the minute it looks all a bit, there are these teams where it's hard to predict the 11. What 11 are they going to go for? The defence, he's chopped and changed a bit at the back. I think Taida has had a couple of injuries, so he's sort of been in and out. Kato, who came in from Giravance, has been playing at centre back, and then he's been in midfield. And so I think Nagai is still trying to kind of settle on his preferred 11. And Duka Boniface came on for a kind of token appearance against his old club at the end of the game, but hasn't had any meaningful game time yet. So still a bit of a work in progress, I think. For Verdi, but yeah, that's obviously been, I guess, been the case for a while now at Ajinomoto. And yeah, Mito, as you said, they'll going forward, they're a lot of fun to watch, and as a neutral, it's fun to watch them defensively too. I think, yeah, Sumiyoshi and Tabinas Jefferson, they both like having the ball at their feet. They like trying to play out, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, you can't, I don't think you can fault them for their intent. And I like Yanagisawa, who's been playing at right back, and Nukui at left back. They're both kind of attack minded. They've got quite a few different options going forward as well. Ando, I think, came in from Machida, and he's been on the bench the last couple of games. Yamane, Yuji Kimura, kind of bit of a veteran, to use the Japanese term. But yeah, he's a steady player in the middle of the park, and Nakayama is kind of a solid centre forward. So yeah, they've got some good players. They're good fun to watch. And yeah, I know the J League have been live streaming J2 games pretty much every week for fans overseas. So I think, yeah, you're in for good value if you see that Mito are playing. They're always worth watching, because they'll almost certainly be goals at one end or the other, if not both.
Yeah, sometimes I kind of stop myself from describing Mito as a side that play with the handbrake off, because I think the reality is they don't have a handbrake to put on.
No, they didn't. They just didn't get one.
Yeah, unnecessary frills. So yeah, always entertaining. Yeah. I also thought, Sean, we might say then Paraiba could be Verdi's get out of jail free card. Before I let you go, Sean, I just want to ask for a quick preview for the round 7 games coming up this weekend. It's what I would call a perfect round fixture-wise, because the games are split fairly evenly across Saturday and Sunday. So on Saturday, April the 10th, we have Akita hosting Omiya, Gunma against Nagasaki, Kofu hosting Kitakyushu, Iwata hosting Matsumoto, and Tokyo Verdy take on Yamaguchi. Which of these games do you like the look of, Sean?
I would probably, out of those, they all look pretty well balanced, don't they? I think maybe Gunma against Varun, because yeah, Varun got the win last weekend, but still not completely convinced by them. And yeah, Gunma are a reasonable side, and they're at home. So yeah, possibly not necessarily Gunma are going to get the win or cause an upset. If indeed it would be an upset on sort of early season form, maybe it wouldn't be. But yeah, I think that could be quite an interesting one to keep an eye on out of those games.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I thought Akita against Omiya, I don't know if you probably couldn't call it a giant killing if Akita got the 3 points, considering they beat Kyoto at home already. But yeah, I just think Omiya are the kind of side that could sleepwalk into another carefully laid trap, couldn't they? If Akita score first and just close shut up shop, I think Omiya might find that game hard going. So yeah, I might watch Akita against Omiya if I have the chance. On the Sunday slate, Sean, April the 11th, the leaders, Niigata, are on the road at Yamagata. Second place, Ryukyu, level on points with Niigata. They're also away from home. They go to Mito. And we have Tochigi against Sagami Hana, Machida against Kyoto, Kanazawa hosting Jeff Chiba, and the purest choice, Dortmund v Liverpool. It's Ehime against Okayama as well. So which one of these games would you pick, Sean?
Well, yeah, I don't want to be too mainstream, so I won't go for the Ehime Okayama one. I'll go a bit off piece. Mito Ryukyu could be 4-4, couldn't it? That could be a good one. Yeah, I think Mito Ryukyu, if they were all kicking off at the same time, they are. Oh, except for the Ehime. Oh, great. So we can have a starter, and then we can get into the main course of Ehime Okayama. Yeah, the ones all kicking off at the same time, I'd probably go for. I'm torn between Mito Ryukyu and Machida Kyoto, but because I went for Machida last weekend against Kanazawa, and I was stuck with a 0-0 into the last minute, I'd probably go with Mito against Ryukyu. I think that, yeah, that should be a, even if there aren't many goals, I think it should be, there should be plenty of good sort of proactive attacking play. So I think, yeah, as a neutral, that would be good. But yeah, Machida Kyoto will certainly be an interesting one to just see how good each team are. I think, you know, I actually tip Machida to be pushing on for a kind of top 4 or 5 finish this year. So against a team like Kyoto, who many thought, including me, many thought would be one of the first two, I think this is another marker to see kind of just how much Machida have got about them. And also, yeah, let's see if Kyoto are they the real deal this year or not. And then yeah, Kanazawa Jeff, that will just be fun, because Jeff will probably score early, and then Kanazawa will get a couple of late goals and win 2-1.
I was just about to say that. But I would add, not only will Jeff score first, but they'll be comfortable and absolutely cruising. Yeah. And then it'll all go wrong in stoppage time. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a back pass or something that doesn't quite make it. It'll be a wet pitch, because it's been raining a lot on Sundays lately. So yeah, there'll be a slightly wet pitch, underhit back pass, and it will either lead straight to a goal, or then a recovering defender will make a lunge, and it will be a red card and a penalty.
We're of one mind. We're of one mind on Jeff Sean, it seems. Yeah. Yeah, I think Machida against Kyoto, I think there's a little bit of subtext. Peter Utaka, I think, was heavily rumoured to be joining Machida, wasn't he, in the winter transfer window? I don't know how much truth there actually was in that, whether it was just kind of rumours, but he was great at the weekend against Jeff, as you mentioned, setting up two goals and just generally being just looking really bored whenever anybody tried to take the ball off him, really.
That's a great description. That's exactly what it is, yeah.
Yeah, he just looks. Yeah, he reminds me of off topic completely, but Marko Arnautovic has that same air of like when people try to tackle him, he would have time to just look at them and be like, "Are you seriously? Were you trying to get the ball?"
Yeah, are we really going to do this? Do we have to? Do you really want me to embarrass you in front of all these people, kind of thing? Yeah, and he's coming up against Shohei Takahashi, so yeah. We could be seeing a red card.
I was going to say, I think Machida are one of the teams where I think they probably do lack a little bit of pace at centre-back. So it could be, you know, if you get turned, you know, if Peter Utaka gets in behind you, we know he's of indeterminate age at this point, but he's very quick. He's got those almost like telescopic legs, hasn't he, to get away from slow defenders. So that could be very interesting. But I think there's more to come from Machida. So I think this could be the game where that things click for them a little bit more. Just finally, I'll give a shout out to Yamagata against Niigata because I think I tipped Yamagata quite heavily early doors, and I'm not ready to give up on that just yet. So I'm going all in. I think Niigata have been excellent over the first few rounds, but just to kind of steal a point from Mike Innes, their performance level is going to dip at some point. And I think it dipped ever so slightly in the Sagamihara game. And I don't think it was just that Michael James was missing. I think they just weren't quite at it. I think they weren't quite as sharp. I think almost beating Verdi 7-0 might have actually taken the edge off them a little bit.
And I think also they're one of these teams where their first 11 and maybe first 12 or 13 are very good. But like if Koji Suzuki were to get injured, who do they have to come in and play the centre-forward role? And it's not just scoring the goals, but it's his movement. It's the space he opens up for the other players. If Shion Honma or Yoshiaki Takagi were to get injured, these are very high-quality players in J2. So if you're suddenly missing one of those real difference-makers, they've obviously got a good squad. They've obviously got decent players in reserve. I think the likes of Fukuto is still injured in central midfield. Obviously, first-choice keeper Kojima is still injured as well. So they've got players in and around the squad, but it's those special players. And if at the moment they've been playing, they've been doing well, and they've been contributing. But yeah, if one or more of those are to be missing for any amount of time, yeah, they might just find themselves kind of getting reeled in a bit. And then so much of it is psychological. It's how well the team react to that, how well the coach is able to manage the situation and just keep the momentum going. So yeah, I do agree that they've started very well and they do look absolutely as the best team in the league at the moment. But yeah, can they keep that going for, as you said, there's another 36 games to go. So it's a long slog ahead.
Yeah, you've given really good analysis. I was just thinking that Niigata are bound to lose sometime, and Yamagata have got to win home games sometime. So I was kind of just looking at the schedule and thinking, well, why not on Sunday? But yeah, we'll wait to see. I think we've cursed all the teams equally there, Sean. So it's probably a good point. Probably a good point to end on. Thanks for joining me. It's really good to catch up and get your thoughts. Hopefully, we can do it again. Sometime. I think we're more than an hour earlier than we finished recording last time. So we're definitely trending in the right direction. Yeah. So people can follow you on Twitter, can't they? At Sean Kiaroru, if they want more. Yes. More insight, more analysis, more of the good stuff. So and to the listeners, thanks for listening and downloading. If you're one of our patrons and you support the pod, extra time and the big pod, the main pod with your hard earned cash, we appreciate that very much. So thank you. But yeah, please don't switch off just yet. If you stay tuned, Mike Innes is going to be along with the J Talk short corner segment, the J3 roundup from the weekend in a moment. So thanks for listening. Goodbye from Sean and I. But stay tuned for Mike. He's going to be along in a moment. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on matches in round 4 of the league season and previewing games coming up in round 5. Before the main business, a quick look at some items of J3 news since the last pod. The Gainare Tottori versus FC Gifu round 4 game, scheduled for Sunday the 4th of April, was postponed after COVID tests produced 2 positive results from among the Gifu playing squad. Subsequently, local health officials requested the team to cease training and other activities through to Thursday the 15th of April, which means this Sunday's round 5 home match with Azul Claro Numazu has also been postponed. There are no details yet on rearranged dates for either game. 4 J3 players are currently quarantining as part of the J-League bubble arrangement for players entering Japan on new visas. These are the FC Imabari duo mentioned in the last episode, Valdemar, a 23-year-old forward from Guinea-Bissau, and Oscar Linton, a 28-year-old defender from Panama, and 2 Kagoshima United players from Brazil, Gerson, a defender who's 29, and a brand new signing, Gustavo, a 24-year-old forward, most recently playing in the top division in Malaysia. Now to the football action in round 4. And let's start with the single game played on Saturday the 3rd of April. Iwate Gurugia Morioka against FC Imabari was expected to be a defensive affair, pre-match press attention focusing on Iwate's rear guard, especially long-standing club goalkeeper Kohei Doi and their former Kyoto and Nagoya centre-back Yusuke Muta. The first half was goalless and quiet, but the game exploded into life on 54 minutes as Toshiki Toya's pinpoint cross found Seigo Take to head Imabari in front. A second goal in 2 games for the rookie striker. Iwate drew level just after the hour when substitute Morelato crossed from the left and Masaomi Nakano's clever dummy set up Kazuki Arinaga to scramble the ball over the line. But Imabari retook the lead in the 68th minute through young left-back Takuya Shimamura, who picked up a loose ball 20 yards outside his own penalty area, raced unchallenged for half the length of the field and fired home a low-angled shot. A superb individual goal, but one which may provide a point of discussion for the Iwate players and coaches in training this week. It looked like Luis Planaguma's team would hold on for a precious win, but with 4 minutes left, Iwate dead ball specialist Taisuke Nakamura swung in a corner that Imabari keeper Shinji Okada could do no more than pat away, setting up a free header for Kosei Wakimoto to dispatch inside the post. For Okada, the distance between bad and worse was short indeed, as with 93 minutes on the clock, Nakamura hoisted up an identical set play, and this time the away team netminder simply slapped the ball into his own goal. And so it finished Iwate 3, Imabari 2. Not the defensive display Yutaka Akita will have wanted, but 8 points from 4 games constitutes an excellent start for his high-flying Cranes. Moving to the games played on Sunday the 4th, another team to have begun well are Tegevajaro Miyazaki, who took part in their first ever J-League Kyushu derby at Ruaso Kumamoto. On the evidence of this performance, Miyazaki are adding a compelling self-belief to their early season consistency. The first half may have been goalless, but the J3 newcomers twice produced beautiful team moves that drew fine saves from Yuya Sato. First, from Yudai Tokunaga's delightful chip, then a powerful drive by Kaito Umeda. From the resulting corner, Umeda also had a close-range volley cleared off the line. For their part, Kumamoto's best moment came in the 38th minute when Hayato Asakawa's delicate chipped shot hit the post and bounced away. But Miyazaki were not to be denied. An hour in, Kaito Umeda picked up the ball in space, took a touch to set himself, and then lashed an unstoppable shot past Sato from 35 yards. Anyone thinking Umeda's confidence might have been affected by missing those chances against Toyama will need to think again. 9 minutes later, it was 2-0 as Kenta Okama's corner was headed back across goal by Shintaro Ihara for Kosuke Fujioka to finish. Incisive attacking play against a static Kumamoto defence. The home side did pull a goal back in injury time when, with the rain falling harder on the Egao Kenko Stadium, captain Sō Kawahara's 25-yard shot slipped through the fingers of Shunsuke Ueda and into the corner. But it ended Kumamoto 1, Miyazaki 2. giving Naruyuki Naito's team 7 points from their 3 games against supposed big guns Kumamoto, Katari Toyama and AC Nagano Parseiro. The question to be asked about Tegevajaro Miyazaki now is, in their debut J3 campaign, how far can they go? As if to provide a ready-made counter-example, Kumamoto have looked good only in patches, and the same could be said of 2 other teams with ambitions to play at a higher level. Under dramatic circumstances, Toyama were held to a 2-2 draw at home to Fukushima United, while at Nagano, the game with Vanrare Hachinohe finished 1-1. Toyama fell behind midway through the first half when Ismaila rode a couple of challenges to set up an unmarked Hiroshi Yoshinaga, whose 20-yard shot snuck inside the post. Substitute Shunta Takahashi levelled things up for Katari 4 minutes after the restart, his header from Nobuyuki Shina's cross looping over Fukushima goalkeeper Kaito Yamamoto and in. Toyama then went ahead on 66 minutes, big striker Yohei Ono putting the finishing touch to a sweeping counter-attack. And it stayed like that until the 4th minute of injury time, when, with the TV graphics indicating the game count of corner kicks at Toyama 10, Fukushima 1, Shoma Kamata headed in Fukushima's first corner kick for their 2nd goal. At home to Hachinohe, Nagano fluffed half chance after half chance before eventually taking the lead in the 51st minute when Vanrare keeper Takuji Yokoyama, wandering around some distance outside his penalty area, badly miskicked a clearance, leaving Naoki Sanda to roll the ball into an empty net for his first of the season. Even when given such an advantage, Nagano couldn't see out the win. Centre-back Keita Yoshioka handled in the penalty area, Hachinohe's star forward Yosuke Kamigata converted the spot kick. Look at the possession, look at the shot counts, look at any stats you like. Toyama and Nagano dominated these games, but there's only one stat that really counts, and home draws against teams who consistently inhabit the lower half of the table won't get you promoted. Elsewhere, Kamatamari Sanuki returned to action following the shock departure of coach Nobuyuki Uenoyama. In charge against Fujieda My FC was Toshihiro Nishimura, who made 6 changes to the side beaten at Gifu in round 3, to no avail, as Sanuki lost 1-0, a 3rd straight defeat, a 3rd straight match without creating even a half chance to score. The game's only goal came in the 35th minute when Sanuki centre-back Takumi Komatsu was beaten to Jun Suzuki's corner by Takayuki Miyamoto, whose perfectly judged glancing header went inside the far post. A 1st Fujieda goal for the ex-YSCC striker. And how his former team would love to have Miyamoto in their lineup now. YSCC are performing only a little better than Kamatamari, having a single goal and a single point to show for their efforts. On Sunday, they lost 1-0 at Azul Claro Numazu, who looked brighter than they did against Hachinohe, and who scored in the 67th minute, when, after good work on the right-hand side by Tatsuya Anzai, the ball reached Ryo Watanabe, whose 15-yard shot was seen too late by keeper Ryosuke Sagawa. Soon afterwards, Hayato Ikegaya became the 3rd YSCC player this season to be sent off, as he received a 2nd yellow card for what looked like dissent during the drinks break, exactly the sort of problem Yuki Stealth can do without. The team with a bye this round were Kagoshima United. So what does all this mean for the current league table? Top of the pile after round 4 are Iwate with 8 points, then come Gifu, Toyama and Miyazaki with 7, Gifu having a game in hand. At the bottom, YSCC have 1 point and propping up the standings with no points but a game in hand are Sanuki. Just time now for a brief look ahead to matches in round 5, with 1 game on Saturday the 10th of April and the others all scheduled for Sunday the 11th. The Saturday fixture sees Fujieda take on Nagano. Then on Sunday there's a Tohoku derby at Hachinohe, where table-topping Iwate are the visitors. The impressive Miyazaki welcome Tottori and the erratic Fukushima are at home to Kumamoto. YSCC face a tough test in their home game with Kagoshima. Can Seneki get off the mark, any kind of mark, really, at home to Toyama? And just a reminder that Gifu versus Numazu has been postponed. The team with a bye in round 5 are Imabari, who returned to action against YSCC 2 weeks on Sunday, when J3 reconvenes after a break in the schedule. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.